No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. It's not the happiest shows. But we did get the Blaine and Gabbert experience. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. My co-host, Seth Cox, is on the line with me. He's from AvengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and also the host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, how was the Blaine Gabbert experience good for you? Because it was seemingly kind of okay for a lot of people, from what it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was one of those things where, again, kind of like the whole Drew Stanton game, I don't put the blame on this game on Blaine Gabbert at all. He did enough for the Cardinals to be in a position to win, and the guys around him kind of failed him.
The Arizona Cardinals lose to the Houston Texans for the first time all season. They lose two games in a row. They're now 4-6 on the year. They lose to the Houston Texans 31-21, despite three touchdown passes by Blaine Gabbert. He did throw two fourth quarter set interceptions, but there were some bright spots and there were some low lights. Definitely a lot to talk about. So what we're going to talk about in this show, we're going to go into the play of Blaine Gabbert. We're going to talk about the two other players that really stood out in Buda Baker and Ricky Seals-Jones. Bruce Arians, there was a soundbite he had after the game, but he made some news with a fourth down call deep in his own territory that didn't work out, and things that he said after the game, which he then recanted on Monday. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the running game and the problem that they've had, the wide receiver position, and, well, what's left of the season. Or you might hear a eulogy, perhaps. And we're going to look ahead to the Jacksonville Jaguars as Blaine Gabbert will now get a second start. So that's what's coming up on this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Before we get started, I want to remind you about our friends over at Harrys.com. I've been talking for the last couple, 3 weeks about the blades that they have and the experience I've had as shaving. I went back to the blades after years of the electric razor, and I must say that the Harrys blades, the shave is incredible. It's incredibly comfortable. It's incredibly close. I love it. And we're getting close to the holiday season. And so if you guys, any of you guys know guys, it can be kind of hard for us to find gifts or to find gifts for guys. And so it can feel impossible. So we've got to find something that's both useful and practical, but it's special. And this holiday season, you might consider going for something from Harry's. Because right now, especially during the holidays, Harry's is offering both a custom and limited edition shaving sets that make perfect gifts. He'll love them. He comes with the blades, a 5-blade cartridge, and close comfortable shave. There's a foaming shave gel. It's really nice. It's really nice. Right now, they've got winter chrome and emerald green handles. It's festive. And you can even personalize it with your engraving. So no matter what you're looking for, it's got you covered. Gifts start at $10. You make good stocking stuffers. You can buy something for yourself, something I might consider doing. And we've got special offers for you guys listening to the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We partnered with Harry's to give you a $5 credit. So you get $5 off your order when you go to harrys.com/seared. And it's only available during the holidays. So this holiday, give Harry's and give handsome. Get your holiday shopping done early and take advantage of free shipping. Go now. Go now, right now, while you're listening, unless you're driving, and then, you know, pull over or something like that. If you're in the office, click open a tab. To get a limited edition holiday shave set while supplies last, go to harrys.com/CRED right now. That's harrys.com/CRED. And let's kick it off. Let's kick it off with Blaine Gabbert. The Blaine Gabbert experience, as I've been calling it. It was the summer of Blaine Gabbert, then he disappeared. But now we are full in on the Blaine Gabbert experience. What were your impressions of Gabbert and his play?
I thought he played well. I thought he did a nice job keeping the offense kind of moving along, kind of slowly but slowly moving along. But that's the thing you do with, you know, backup quarterbacks. You out of their hands, so to speak, and you try to say, okay, we're gonna give you throws that are easy in the scope of NFL throws, and then we're going to play it safe, and then we're going to play defense and field position, blah blah blah. And I thought the Cardinals did that. When you look at, you know, Gabbert's spray chart at the end of the day, threw literally zero deep passes, did not throw the ball over 20 yards once the entire game, which I feel like was probably what caused Bruce Arians to have the aneurysm that he had to go for that fourth down play, because he'd just been itching to try something all game, and he hadn't done it yet. Because that, I mean, that's the most anti-Bruce Arians offense we've seen in his, you know, games coached here. That's, it's just that it's not what Bruce Arians does. But he was efficient. He was on time, and he kept the Cardinals in a position to win the game. For, you know, they were leading in the fourth quarter with Blaine Gabbert at quarterback. I don't know, from the perspective or reality of backup quarterbacks in the NFL. I remember, I feel like a lot of times when we talk about Blaine Gabbert, we forget that he is a guy that's in his sixth NFL season, that he's made 40 NFL starts. This was his 41st start in the NFL. You know, this is not a 2016 or 2017 rookie. This is a guy that's been through the ringer of the NFL. He knows it. And so when you look at it, we say everything is like, yeah, he looked good. Be a quarterback of the future. It's like, well, maybe this is what he is, and that's okay. Because he looked like a really good backup quarterback in the NFL. He looked like a high-end backup quarterback that can come in and keep you in ball games and give you a chance to win. And quite frankly, when you have backup quarterbacks, that's all you can ask for in the NFL.
And yes, for me, you get three touchdown passes from Blake Gabbert. What, I mean, 41 NFL starts in his seventh year. That was his career high. He's never had more than that. I mean, you're not going to have a ton of players that go four or five touchdown passes, but even random guys get four and five. I mean, heck, Matt Flynn, would he throw six or seven in a game? Nick Foles had his magic year. Blaine Gabbert never, you know, in all those years that he's played, has never gone past three touchdowns in a game. And, you know, if you get three touchdown passes out of Blaine Gabbert, you have to feel really good.
You have to feel like you should win that game. I mean, like, let's
be honest. Right, and they were winning that game. You could tell he was reasonably comfortable with the offense, that he knew where he was supposed to go with the ball. His throws were reasonably on target. Not everything was perfectly on target. Not that every throw from every player in the NFL is like that. There were plays to be there that he missed a couple. Well, and especially because he started out hot. I mean, like you said, he didn't try anything excessively difficult. He didn't take shots down the field. But, you know, early in the game, even those intermediate throws, which are the money throws, that they're kind of what make or break you, I think, in the NFL. It's not the deep passes, because there aren't a ton of offenses now that take advantage of those. But those money throws from 10 to 19 yards, he was really effective on those early in the game. He started 11 for 14. And two of those should have been caught, to be honest. So he should have started. He should have started 13 of 14. He had the touchdown pass to Fitz, which is a play that really no other receiver on the roster could have made. But it was a solid enough throw. It wasn't a perfectly placed ball. But he's a. If you're looking at now and into the future, you can trust that, okay, you can be in a position to win games with Gabbert at quarterback, even if it's on his first start. It is interesting the way people talk about him, considering we are talking about him like he was drafted last year and he could be the start of the future. I don't know. I mean, the reason why people think that way is because everything that we've heard from the Cardinals brass. I mean, you talk about Michael Bidwill talking about their, you know, guys off the scrap heap turning into starters. Bruce Arians has talked about it. There was the one community event where Harold Goodwood was talking about, you know, how those weapons for the future for Blaine Gabbert, like they really think that there's a possibility he's got a future with the team, and almost like, you know, Arian says starter and waiting, that's what they've seen him as. And you look at it as, yes, he's got so much time in the league, but he hasn't had a lot of success, and so you build off that. Maybe that's what he is, maybe there's more, but he needs to see, okay, he deserves another start. And luckily, which kind of the fun part of that is they kind of changed their, we do get to see him against the Jaguars, so we get to see the great battle of Blaine Gabbert versus old team, or Gabbert versus Bortles, which you and I like to joke about could be the that could be the quarterback battle next year in camp, right? Blake Bortles versus Blaine Gabbert and a rookie.
Who's not excited for that? I mean,
come on,
that is what I've been looking forward to most. And I think you hit on a couple things, and I know people are going to get upset with me, and quite frankly, I don't care. But you know, you hit on it. Like this management group is saying, the coaches are saying, wow, this guy, you know, he's really impressed us. Whatever the fancy terms Bruce Arians used in his description of Gabbert as the only quarterback three he's ever had, or, you know, whatever the offshoot he's kind of said of that was. But you have to remember, this is the same management group that in May told us that they had 12 NFL receivers on their roster. And now it's, you know, week 12 of the NFL season, and they just held a...
trying to get rid of them all.
Yeah, basically they held an open tryout to say, hey, does anybody want to come play wide receiver for the Arizona Cardinals? Because it's not going well. And that's the thing. I mean, it is what it is. But and so maybe you do get excited about Gabbert, but I think if we go into this with the idea of like, look, this kid is playing to be the backup moving forward for the Arizona Cardinals, and anything you get over that is just gravy. And the reality is, like at this point, if he is basically interchangeable for Drew Stanton, you're getting a guy that's 6'7" younger than Stanton. That's probably going to be a couple million dollars a year cheaper. And so you know, all of a sudden you can sign Blaine Gabbert to a 3-year, $10 million contract as the backup. Maybe he's, you know, maybe he gets 2019 to prove that he could be a starter when Carson Palmer retires. And if not, he's that bridge to whatever, you know, Josh Allen, when I quit being an Arizona Cardinals fan forever.
If not Josh Allen, why not Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen? I mean, those guys too, wouldn't it?
I like those guys at least. Like, at least I can stomach.
Oh, geez. Yeah, so Blaine Gabbert, the Blaine Gabbert experience will continue. He will start at least one more time. I mentioned to you off the air the notion that the Cardinals really changed their all last week. It was about deception. You kind of got the feeling that Gabbert was going to start, but they never ruled out Stanton. And I think part of that was for Stanton's pride, because he wanted to play. You know, Stanton's, you know, if he can protect himself, he'll make the start. But ultimately, he did. I mean, Stanton came was healthy enough to even be the backup. This week, you know, last week they were trying to get Stanton back, and then now this week they're like, yeah, we're going to stick with Blaine because, you know, Stanton came a long way. He's healthier, but hey, now we're going to wait till he's even healthier now and then cross that bridge. And I think, you know, they were just kind of hedging their bets. Okay, they were always going to give Blaine Gabbert that start unless Stanton had a miraculous return or if Gabbert looked awful in practice. He didn't look awful during the game. He made plays early. Didn't make plays late. But it was definitely enough to say, okay, well, there's no need to rush Stanton back. We can ride this. And now they're saying, okay, well, now we get to evaluate Gabbert. Now, another point I guess we didn't kind of make is this. You know, what did we see from Blaine Gabbert? We saw him play well early, but then when it counted in the fourth quarter, what happened in the two last drive when they needed, when they absolutely needed something? Pick and pick. Which really put a damper on what happened. Now, it's not like he was all his fault. The second interception was a bad throw. The other one was a little off target, thrown to their fifth string receiver, who didn't help anything by breaking up the ball or anything like that, or going after the ball. But, you know, Gabbert got you close, and then when you needed things to happen, he couldn't do anything. Game one, we'll see against a better team this week, and for however many weeks we still get him, we'll have to wait and see. But that was the only downside, is that you didn't see him make things happen when the Cardinals needed it most.
And again, it goes back to my point about Stanton last week and Gabbert. And these, like, when people listen to me say, like, he's not your quarterback of the future, they take that as like, oh, you think he sucks. No, I don't think he sucks. I just think he's an NFL backup, which is fine. Like, but that's where the line is. And you kind of hit on it, like, you're defined by making those intermediate throws. You know, can you make these intermediate throws consistently? Gabbert was something like 7 for 17 on those throws, but two touchdowns, or all three of his touchdowns were on those throws. So, I mean, if you're going to only hit 7, I guess getting 3 of them for touchdowns is the way to go. But the other thing is, yeah, how clutch are you? Can you come up for, and these are all non-scouting terms. These are all non, you know, these aren't things that you can quantify.
These aren't the analytics. Yeah. This is the football, right. The eye test.
So when you watch him go out and then, you know, throw behind a receiver like Britton Golden and go, well, you know, and you and I had this conversation before the show, like, you know, you would hope that a receiver would make a better play on that ball to kind of break it up, even though it's behind him. He's, you know, there's only one or two receivers in the NFL that could make that catch. But, you know, then there's another, you know, if you have 10 receivers, there's another 5 that are able to break that ball up. But you also have to go, well, if you're going to throw the ball to Britton Golden, you probably should put it in a spot that Britton Golden can catch it. He's a career end of the roster player. Like, he's a special teamer and emergency wide receiver. It's not like he's a guy that you count on to make plays. So if you're making
Britton Golden calls himself a fifth year rookie is how he's describing it, because of the way he has to make the team every year. He's a fifth year rookie.
So you know, if you make that bad throw to Britton Golden, well, it's probably going to get picked off because you made that bad throw of Britton Golden and not Larry Fitzgerald or John Brown, who apparently is Britton Golden this year. But so, you know, and like you said, the second one, I think that was just pressing, like trying to make a play. And that's the thing. That's kind of what delineates a Carson Palmer from a Drew Stanton, Blaine Gabbert. Like, that's
where the truth is, Palmer does that. Palmer has a history of doing that in his career too, but for every one of those forced interceptions, he has big time throw after big time throw we've seen over the last 3 years.
Right. That's the question you have. So, you know, that's where they're at right now.
Well, let's wrap up the Gabbert talk. And coming up next on Rise to Say, we're going to talk about some more bright spots. Two other players who stood out in the game. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. Not only did Blaine Gabbert give some positives, but there were definitely two bright spots in the game. And that was Buda Baker, who apparently is the best safety of all time and the best kept secret in the NFL, and Ricky Seals-Jones, another guy, is like, who? And it comes out and makes some plays.
You weren't down with Ricky Seals-Jones before the game started?
I mean, I didn't put on my fantasy team, I'll tell you that. My insider information that I have didn't tell me that. So he finally gets into the starting lineup. And he's incredible. Now, Tyvon Branch having a fantastic year, talking about, you know, not necessarily would he be a Pro Bowl player just because he is by name, but he was playing at a Pro Bowl level. He was making plays, and then Buda takes it another level. 12 tackles overall, 2 for Olo, like at least 1 for loss. He has a sack, he has a forced fumble, 2 forced fumbles, a fumble recovery. He breaks up a pass, and then he still plays on special teams, helps down the ball inside the one, and makes another special teams tackle. He was all over the field. He was violent. And You have a take on this, and I'm not gonna go after quite as hard, but give us your take on the fact that Buddha was able to play so well and not be able to sniff the field except for like two or three plays the rest of the year.
Well, and this is, you know, this is what I've struggled with this regime in general, and is that they've consistently, I'm trying to think, outside of Tyrann Mathieu, and I think Mathieu even got the start in 2013 because of injury, because I think they were planning on somebody else, and then that safety got
hurt early.
Yeah, and so it's almost impossible for a rookie to get on the field, and then you have this guy Buda Baker that's just kind of been sitting and sitting and sitting, and like you said, Tyvon Branch has played well, but Tyvon Branch's entire career has never had a game as good as Buda Baker had in this game, and it's like it's not a shot at this regime or anything like that. It's just it's a fundamental thing that I don't understand of why, even if Tyvon Branch is playing at that level, you've had Buda Baker sitting there. Maybe he comes in for, you know, another player, number 32 or something, and has a chance to do things. Like, I just don't understand how you go, it's game 11 before you see, or I guess game 10 for them, but, you know, week 11 before you see the full arsenal of what Buda Baker can do. Like, it's just, it's a baffling situation to me.
And for me, it always comes down to a couple of things. It's the type of team that you believe you are, and your belief on how rookies should go. If you're a team that's expected to compete, you generally can't afford those mistakes that rookies make, such as what did we see early in the season, the first game and a half from Brandon Williams when he was thrown into the fire. They make critical mistakes, and they're not just little mistakes, they're mistakes that lead to points. And Buddha had issues. I mean, he didn't because of playing at Washington, because of that rule that they have, he didn't even get to do anything with the team until practically training camp. He missed pretty much the entire offseason. And even in the preseason and training camp, you saw him making mistakes that would have, especially, you know, they call him fish bait, because he would always bite on anything in the boxes. You want to make a play and then get beat over the top. And so I get, especially when you have a team like the Cardinals where they've been in the mix, and even how things are going right now, when you have a team that's in the mix to trying to win games, it's hard to put rookies out there to make critical mistakes. And so you're going to go with steady over flashy. And I think it just became the perfect storm, because it's November, which is kind of the benchmark for rookies. You're no longer a rookie when it's, because you've had training camp, you've had the first half of the season, and it was the perfect time for Buddha to get in the game, and you get to see just the type of potential he's got. And I'm reminded what I think I said, we both said after he was drafted not long after, and he said he's a bigger, faster, stronger, more durable version of Tyrann Mathieu. And we got a glimpse into that, because it's kind of doing a little bit of everything.
Yeah, and he's obviously just a really talented player in what he does. And, you know, he's a playmaker, and he's going to put the Cardinals in a position to score, especially with Blaine Gabbert as your quarterback. I mean, you know, I talked about it off the air. His first two drives were 15 yards and 17 yards. I mean, 32 total yards of offense for two touchdowns. You know, obviously one was the great interception by Patrick Peterson off a Deion Buchanan tip, but the first one was set up by Buda Baker, strip, sack, fumble, recovery, all by himself. I mean, he wasn't the only guy on the playing, but, you know, he made that play basically by himself. So it's one of those things where you look at it and you go, man, like, this is kind of obvious, right? Like, like, why wasn't this guy playing more? But here's the thing, and maybe this is the worst thing I can say about this entire topic. it doesn't change the season at all. Buda Baker, even if he plays at that same level every single week, does that change any of their losses? I mean, does that...
Probably not.
Anything that's happened this season? No. So, you know, maybe in hindsight, it doesn't matter because it would have just been more of an enjoyment for us as you know, not just fans, but people that have to write about the team every week.
And the other player that stood out was Ricky Seals-Jones, undrafted rookie, former receiver, you know, formerly five-star recruit receiver for Texas A&M. Disappointing college career, comes out after college, converts to tight end. Almost, you know, he's in the mix to make the team, sits on the practice squad, gets promoted. Then with Mfani Moma going down with injury, he suddenly has a role on the team, and oh boy, was it a role. What did he play? A handful of snaps, and it seemed like he was on the field a whole lot more than he was, when the reality was he played 8 snaps. He was the number 3 tight end. He was playing the same role that Mfani Moma did, only guess what? Every time that there was a pass play, he became, I guess he was option number 1, or whether it was a comfort level with Gabbert because of the work they'd done in practice on the scout team and things like that. He made plays. He's, and the Pro Football Focus noted that on all five of the pass routes he went out on, he was targeted. He makes the 3 catches and 2 for touchdowns. It gave you a little bit of excitement for moving forward because you saw what he became a higher upside. If Mfani Moma, he also made 2 tackles on special teams, by the way. So it's not like he was. You look at the tight end position. You got Jermaine Gresham, who's going to be back next year. His contract doesn't make any sense to get rid of him. Plus, the team loves him. Troy Nicholas is a free agent. You potentially, I mean, it's kind of crazy. With that play, you think maybe he becomes the guy to back up Gresham, even though that's a little risky to do. But it at least gives you possibly an option. And hopefully he's more durable than Mfani Moma, who has never finished an NFL season healthy.
In best case scenario, he's he's finally finding his calling after being, like you said, he's a 5-star recruit. So it's not like the kid was without talent. I know it's a different game, but so maybe he's in a place that can help him flourish, where he's can use that big body and make plays against smaller defensive backs and slower. No, not anymore in this NFL, but, you know, supposedly slower linebackers. Let's be honest, now it's smaller linebackers at this point because they're, you know, 6'2", and he's 6'6". So, you know, I think that's the best thing you can hope for of him, is that he, you know, like you said, he becomes a really solid, you know, maybe number 3 tight end, or, you know, best case scenario, maybe he becomes kind of a every down player that you can count on. So at this point, though, I think you're at the point where you just want to see positives to coming out of every week. So you take what Gabbert did as a positive, you know, okay, we might have a quarterback that we, you know, a young backup quarterback for the next three plus years. You take Buda Baker and you go, man, we could have a star. I mean, we already know we have Chandler Jones and Patrick Peterson, 2 all pro type players at their position. Now we may have a star at linebacker. At safety. And then with, you know, Seals-Jones, like you said, all right, we might have a diamond in the rough. We may have a guy that can be a tight end. Let's start small, you know, let's get greedy and say we have the next Antonio Gates. Let's start small and look at it as a guy that, all right, maybe this is a guy that can be our number 3 tight end. He can compete with Troy Nicholas this year to be the number 2, and then next year he comes in as your number 2 tight end.
And, you know, at minimum, you have a more durable version of Mfani Moma, who has made some, you know, improved as a blocker, has made a few plays in the passing game. And Seals-Jones probably has a higher ceiling at the moment, also a former receiver. But you Mfani Moma kind of made his money, kind of did his deal in special teams. And Seals-Jones, when given special teams reps, he performed as well. So you kind of give this, okay, he's definitely something. with the game time, with the gameplay and the plays that he made, you've at least got someone who you can count on to be in the mix for the roster next year. When you're kind of building the roster, you've already got someone. It's not like, well, maybe he's not a body, but he's actually a talent.
Yeah, and that's important for the Cardinals because, let's be honest, we're getting to the point, you know, where we're talking about Ifeanyi Moma. That's not a shot at him. That's just the reality. Like, we're looking for good things this year. And, you know, if that's what you get, then that's great. That's great if that's what comes out of this whole thing.
To be honest, this is about it in terms of the positive stuff that you could talk about. So we're going to come back on Rise of C-Red and start talking about some a little bit less fun, but, you know, meaningful things to talk about. And we'll talk about Bruce Arians, some things that he said, some things that he did, and some things that he took back. That's coming next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on Rise of C-Red, and Bruce Arians made an interesting decision in the fourth quarter with 6.5 minutes left in the game. Cardinals are down by 3. They're in their own territory. They're at the 33, 34-yard line. And fourth and less than a yard. And he decides to go for it. I mean, it's not the craziest thing we've seen him do, but considering the situation, considering the closeness of the game, considering the time left on the clock and the place on the field, it was a surprise. They hand the ball to Adrian Peterson. He stuffed very next play, touchdown Deontay Foreman, and it's a 10-point game instead of a 3-point game playing field position with a hope to get a stop, get the ball back, score some points, tie the game, or take the lead. And that basically lost the game right there. After the game, Bruce Arians says, "That's on me. I shouldn't have done it. In retrospect, I should have punted the ball and not, you know, trust is a funny thing when you can't gain a foot." Even then, I mean, he kind of took the blame. He took the blame. He said, "It's my fault for calling the play." So you're like, ah, way to go. Falling on the sword, taking responsibility. And then Monday comes around, and he, mind you, this was in his opening statement. This was not when he was asked about it. This was in his opening statement. He talked about some of the positives, talked about some of the injuries, and they said, "Oh, and I take back that bleep that I said yesterday. That was a great play call. It was a great design. Goody did a good job. And we didn't get whooped there. It was a missed block. It was a mental mistake. So, you know, I take back everything I said." What were your takeaways on that? Well, between the what he did, what he said, and then what he took back?
I didn't understand why you even need to take it back. Like, that's something, you know, that can stay in house for the most part. Like, you don't need to, it doesn't have to be discussed. But I think, you know, a lot of times, let's be honest, our buddy Coach Bruce Arians tends to be very confident in his ability. And so I think that when that happened, he wanted to let everybody know, like, "Hey, I didn't make this mistake. I was wrong. I was right the first time." So, you know, that's Arians. Let's be honest. Like, that's who he's been the entire time. And I don't think that's going to change.
And from my perspective, you know, I disagree personally with the idea 6.5 minutes left in the game, you're deep in your territory, that you go for it on fourth down. I think even if less than a yard for the foot, it's too risky to do that. The risk reward, what, you're going to get a first down and then maybe you still have to punt the ball away? Considering what you had said earlier about the scoring drives the Cardinals had thus far, it's not that they had moved all the way down the field. So this was almost a desperation move. But that said, my take is kind of what Arians said. Because after he made the comments, I read the comments, I heard the comments, and I said, okay, so what happened on that play? So I pull out Game Pass, I look at it, and I looked at the tape. And Arians is right in this sense. It wasn't the play call that was the problem. It was the execution. There was a mental mistake. I actually wrote about it. I have a post. I got some screenshots on there of how the play occurred. That play should have easily gotten the first down. It was an assignment mistake, what appears to be Alex Boone, who, you know, how the play is designed to be blocked. You had Jared Valdir when the snap goes. He goes directly for the defensive tackle, DJ Reader. Alex Boone initially does as well, but he should have gone to the next level immediately and looked for the linebacker, Zach Cunningham, who just kind of create that space, just to create that space. Boone didn't. He hesitated, went to block Reader initially until Jared Valdir got there, then turned to block Cunningham, and Cunningham was already in the hole, forced Adrian Peterson to cut back. You know, looking at that, he might have, had Peterson still gone straight for it, maybe he still picks it up, but he cuts it back to the left. He gets shoestrung by Cunningham, and Jadeveon Clowney's waiting right there, and it was just a disaster of a play. And, you know, Bruce Arians said he takes everything back. It wasn't the call. No, it wasn't the call. It wasn't the call. It was the execution. And that's why he didn't take responsibility for it after the fact. He took responsibility for it initially because when he's standing on the sideline, what it looks like, it looked like, and the Texans whooped him, that the Texans physically overtook him. He looks at the tape and he says, wait a minute. It wasn't the call. It was a busted assignment. And so, no, he takes back everything because if Alex Boone, a veteran, not a young guy, if he just simply blocks the guy he's supposed to block, if he doesn't make the wrong step first, they pick up the first down, and who knows what happens after that. For me, the problem with what everyone else is saying is this. No one is talking about or even criticizing the move if it works. Adrian Peterson picks up the first down. No one's talking about it. It's just a footnote in the game. It's only being talked about because it didn't work. When if ultimately it comes down to execution, then it doesn't really matter. Now, personally, it shouldn't have happened. I would never make that call simply because the risk is too great. But he hadn't done anything risky the entire game, so that's, you know, decided that was the time to do it. The defense wasn't playing well, and so it was a way to keep the offense on the field. And they went out and got Adrian Peterson. If you have Adrian Peterson and you can't pick up half a yard, why do you have Adrian Peterson? So ultimately it came down to Bruce Arians was more than willing to take responsibility for it until he saw that there was a mental mistake. He would take credit for any physical beating that the Texans did. But on a missed assignment, he's not taking responsibility for that. And for people who were shocked about that, about what he said publicly, just understand that was a conversation they already had. Alex Boone probably got his tail torn up after that. After that, when all sort of expletives and all of that, but he probably got an earful from Arians, knowing that perhaps cost them the game.
Right, and my biggest issue with the whole thing is it tells me it's odd. It tells me that either Arians had supreme confidence in his defense and that the flukes of the last four drives of touchdowns by Tom Savage were flukes. Had no confidence in his defense and that he didn't think his defense could stop Tom Savage. I don't know which way to go on that.
Well, then it also, you have Adrian. I mean, you've got right. Adrian Peterson. Well, he can pick up a foot, right? He can pick up a foot.
I get that, but the other thing is this, and we had talked about this earlier. You know, when you look at it, you say to yourself, "All right, the long scoring drive of the day was 51 yards by Blaine Gabbert. I haven't really asked Blaine to do anything too complicated. I haven't asked him to really strain himself in any ways. So, do we see them go 87 yards on this drive? Because this drive started at 13. They were only at the 34. It's not like they were at their or the Texans 34. They were at their 34. So they'd gone 21 yards in five plays or six plays, whatever it was. And did they really think that this was an 87-yard, six-minute scoring drive that was about to happen? Or should they try to reestablish field position for Gabbert on a short field and then try to make something happen. Like that's where I am more confused by it. Like you said, he hadn't been aggressive all game. And at 6:33 of the fourth quarter, down three in your own, basically almost in your own red zone, you're going to be aggressive? Like that, it just, the timing of it didn't make sense. But I told you this off the air, and this is one of Arian's fatal flaws, but what adores him to players initially is that he has supreme confidence in himself and the players. So he believed that Blaine Gabbert could lead an 87-yard, 8 minutes overall scoring drive to give the Cardinals at least a tie and maybe a lead. So that, again, that's not a bad thing. That's just who he is as a coach. Like, I don't doubt that this is going to work. So,
well, and
that's what
the one thing that you have to, that Arian still should have taken responsibility for is the fact, if you're going to make that call, you still risk mental mistakes, whether it's your veteran right left guard in Alex Boone. But players don't always execute, and you're in a position where if there's a mental mistake or if the defense just overpowers you, you put yourself in a really bad spot in a game in which you're already losing. And so he does have to take responsibility for that fact, is the fact you risk mistakes like that when you take risks like that. But going on the running game was another issue. Adrian Peterson, is for the two games that he's been fantastic in, he now in five games has three games where he's rushed for less than 30 yards. Not ideal. 14 carries for 26 yards for Adrian Peterson. And, aside from take those two games away where he was absolutely fantastic, guess what? You've got the same running game the Cardinals had early in the season with Kerwin Williams and with Chris Johnson. What are the Cardinals to do with this? Like, can it be fixed?
No, it can't. And there's nothing that can be done other than health, and that's not going to happen this year. So you have to just take – I mean, they're not going to run for any yards next against the Jaguars this week, who apparently – a reincarnation of the 1985 Bears now that they've traded for Marcell Dareus. It's not going to get better. We can always talk about players being bitter. And is Chris Johnson bitter? Yes, absolutely, 100%. There's no questions about this. But he's also right. Bitter and still be right about what he's seeing or what he has seen from the organization that he was kind of left high and dry of. And the reality is this. Here's the one thing he's off on. It's not like Steve Keim hasn't tried. I mean, we've talked about it. They've essentially invested four first-round picks in their offensive line.
It just hasn't worked out. People getting hurt.
Yeah, hurt, mentally hurt, got old. Like, and then as things started to finally a little bit click again, then – DJ Humphreys gets hurt again. So, it's a story as old as time for the Cardinals. Whatever they try to throw at the wall for the offensive line just doesn't work.
It doesn't work out.
You don't keep trying, but it's going to end up being the reason why, if Bruce Arians, tenure ends unceremoniously, that'll be the reason why. But that's the one difference between – or that's one of the bigger differences between he and Ken Wisenhunt, is that Arians and Keim have invested heavily in the offensive line. They have gone out there. They have signed free agents for top dollar, top-tier free agents, and they've invested two first-round picks on guys that were supposed to be good. And it just – hasn't worked, and so I don't know what else you can say but that
it underscores the entire thing, that the problem early in the year, it wasn't David Johnson and his bad game, and it wasn't Chris Johnson, it wasn't Kerwin Williams, it's DJ Humphreys. Not DJ Humphreys being bad, but being DJ Humphreys not on the field. And it just shows how really good he is. And the concern that you have moving forward, that he's, that's three times in a very short time, three times in a season, in a year, in a calendar year, where he has been sidelined for multiple games for injuries, a concussion, an MCL, and then more knee issues. But
and they're all freak things.
Potential. I mean, and you see the potential because he is so good in the run game. Just incredibly good in the run game. He's solid in the pass game. And has he become Brandon Albert? Is that what he's become?
He just hasn't had that Pro Bowl season that Albert had. But yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair comparison. And it's just frustrating because, you know, you had Jonathan Cooper who was a bust because of injuries. And now you have DJ Humphreys, who's on the verge of being a bust because of injuries. I mean, it's not that these guys couldn't play. It's that they couldn't play because they were always hurt. And then Cooper obviously had other issues as time went along. He's now doing okay. All of a sudden, he's come back down to earth now that Tyron Smith isn't there next to him. Amazing how that works. But I mean, that's the thing with the offensive line too, is it really is a hand or a fist. I know that we tell the kids this when we coach our youth teams is, you know, if one finger's broken and you can't make that fist, that means that something can get through there. But if you have that fist, it's hard to, you know, penetrate. And that's what the offensive line is. And let's be honest, the Cardinals have been lucky if they've had three fingers healthy on that fist the entire tenure of Steve Keim and Bruce Arians. And again, it's not for lack of trying. I mean, they've done everything they can think of other than, you know, maybe sacrifice a guy, you know, to the offensive line gods or something.
With that, coming up next on Rise to Sea Rev, we've got a couple more topics to talk about on the negatives, and that's coming up next. Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. The wide receiver position. What are we going to do with it? What are the Cardinals going to do with it? Six more drops after, you know, and it looks like it's been almost it seemed like as many as 10 catches, 10 throws against Seattle that should have been caught. They weren't all dropped. Steve Keim used the number dropped six passes against the Texans, and it could have been as many as another. Blaine Gabbert got absolutely no help, and it's outside of Larry Fitzgerald, no other receiver is doing anything, and in fact, they are hurting the team. Jerron Brown's missing things. John Brown's not catching easy balls. He's not catching the less than perfect throws, which receivers have to be able to do. They have to be able to call in throws that aren't perfectly on target, because that's not always the case. J.J. Nelson, who continues just to not have hands or something, but Bruce Arians now has said, and Bruce Arians and Steve Keim had said that there's going to be changes, and we've already seen some things happen. Andre Ellington was released. They brought up Carlton Agudosi from the practice squad. Chad Williams is going to get his chance. As of right now, there are seven receivers. As of Tuesday night, there are seven receivers on the roster, four running backs and three tight ends. I speculate that there's going to be some other moves. Perhaps John Brown's season is over. He suffered turf toe in the game. If it's going to miss more than a few weeks, then they might just put him IR because, you know, we got six games left in the year. So you might see that happening, but there's changes coming to the receiver room, and can the Cardinals, I mean, is there anything, is there really anything that the Cardinals can do at the position?
I think you just have to hope, and that's a really crappy thing to say. I think you just have to hope that Chad Williams is what you expected him to be, and that you get, you know, obviously not two touchdowns, but you get a similar kind of spark if Carlton Agudosi sees the field. Here's the reality, though. Offenses only need two wide receivers. If you have a guy like Jermaine Gresham, or who knows, maybe Ricky Seals-Jones, who can take the pressure off. But when you have only one wide receiver and the other team has to not respect anyone else on the roster at this point, I mean, because that's what's happening is that the teams are, they're saying, okay, Larry Fitzgerald is going to beat us. There's nothing we can do. But you know who's not going to beat us? Adrian Peterson. So we're going to put eight men in the box, and we're going to dare dare J.J. Nelson and John Brown and Jermaine Gresham and Andre Ellington before he was cut. You know, we're going to dare any of these other guys to make a play. Jerron Brown. And it's not happening. I mean, it's just not happening. There's nothing. It's not happening. It hasn't been close to happening. So now you bring in Chad Williams, who, let's be honest, was, based upon lack of playing time this year, was a reach in the third round. Maybe he comes out and he plays well and he proves that to be wrong, but just due to lack of playing time in year one, you would expect a little more from your third round pick. And so, you know, maybe you'll see him come out and be able to do some things. Because that's the thing. He offers something that the Cardinals just flat out don't have now. And that's a little bit of like what David Johnson can do with the ball in his hands. He's not as good as David Johnson. You know, I'm not saying that. But maybe he can make some people miss. Maybe he can take a 3 or 4 yard gain and turn it into a big gain. You know, he's not going to be a precise a route runner at this point. He's not going to be a guy that is really running free for Blaine Gabbert on a consistent basis. But if he's a guy that can catch the ball behind the line of scrimmage and gain 7 to 9 yards on 2 or 3 plays of the game, and then all of a sudden they have to start to bring somebody outside of the box to match up with him. Okay, that works out, because all of a sudden that does what you need it to do. Carlton Agudosi, if he gets on the field, he just has to win those 50-50 balls. I mean, that's literally all they need him to do at this point, is just be an option that, okay, I'm going to throw the ball up. Hopefully you win it. Now, this week, again, is probably not the best week for that to happen, but it's got to happen at this point. And here's the other thing, and we saw it a little bit with Ricky Seals-Jones, and you talked about it. I think Jarecki tweeted about it. Other people tweeted about it. But, you know, Ricky Seals-Jones, Carlton Agudosi, Chad Williams, who's been their quarterback in practice for, you know, the first 10 games?
They've had the Blaine Gabbert experience all year.
Right. So this is, you know, this – so – you know, maybe you can blame slightly, not really, but slightly blame Brown and Nelson, their struggles on not having played a ton of reps with Blaine Gabbert. I don't buy that, but whatever. These guys have. And so they'll have a bit of a rapport with Blaine, and that makes a difference.
It does. Let's move on to the next topic, which is this. Is the season over and what to do now? And this is... I'm going to compare it like this. The last few weeks we talked about we're going to declare the season dead. The season technically isn't dead, so I'm not going to say that they're dead and buried. Time of death Sunday against the no. But on Sunday they received their terminal. They received the news from the doctor that whatever they have is terminal. They might last a month, and then they're dead. But they're still going to die. And it's coming soon. So what we know what the Cardinals are in their current status is they are not well, and anything less than a miracle is not going to get them back. They're 4-6. They're the 12th seed. They currently would have the 10th pick overall, but the 12th seed, that they're only 2 games back of a playoff spot, but there's 5 teams between them and that playoff spot. So it is what it is. The season isn't done. They're not dead, but they are dying at this point.
And I think at this point, you know, you're looking for small victories. Because I think when you and I talked last week, and when we talked 2 weeks ago, and when we talked 3 weeks ago, the conversation was always, this is a 7-win team because of the schedule. Well, now it's probably a 6-win team because of the schedule.
Probably.
And it's because they lost one of those games that you and I thought, okay, no, Deshaun Watson, Tom Savage averages about 10 points a game on offense. I don't know why you and I still believe in this defense. We'll be checked for, you know, concussion-like syndrome eventually and figure out what's going on. But,
we've got fan CT going on.
Yes. Yeah. So it's one of those situations where you just, I, I, I don't know why. I don't know why we continue to believe in this defense. Maybe
because
it was
of all the talent,
fact that it was,
right?
Well, and maybe it was the fact that it was Tom Savage
and Chiron. That is true.
But I think a lot of it was you looked at it and you go, it's Tom Savage. Like, that dude sucks. And so even with Blaine Gabbert as your quarterback, you said, okay, you got to like them in, you know, a 14-10 type game. And then you got 3 touchdowns and you're like, oh, all right, well, that was more than I expected. All right, 21-10, 21-14 maybe. And then just kept going and you're like, no, what's going on? Like, this is Tom Savage, guys. Come on. I mean, Blaine Gabbert didn't even throw a pick 6. He didn't fumble the ball. He didn't throw a stupid interception.
He did have one ball that came out of his hand. Like, what the heck happened? But I mean, it was just,
yeah. And then he had the one play where he was running, you know, rolling out, and instead of just throwing the ball away,
he runs out of bounds.
Running out of bounds for 3 yards, and you're like, does he forget that he can just throw the ball away? Anyways, but you know, you look at it, and if I was to tell you that Blaine Gabbert would not lead to any Texan scores. No Blaine Gabbert mistakes would lead to any Texan scores, and the Cardinals would force 2 Tom Savage turnovers and convert both of those to touchdowns. You'd be like, oh, win. Maybe even a blowout. And instead, you got a 10-point loss. Like, so what I'm trying to say without actually saying it, I hope everybody's picked up on that, is I don't really know if there's a hope left in this season at this point, because that was the game. Like, that game literally for 3 quarters went exactly how you needed it to go for a win.
And then it fell apart.
And then it fell apart, and you're like, oh, no.
The defense didn't stop anyone. Bruce Arians got in his own way. Blaine Gabbert couldn't make key throws, and they couldn't gain a foot when they needed to. All in all, you have a team that is not dead, but there is no hope of living. Which leads us to, what do they do now? Well, I you have to keep trying to win games.
I think they're going about it the right way. I do. Like, right. Don't get me wrong. I still don't think that there's any discernible difference of play, level of play, between Drew Stanton and Blaine Gabbert. But I said this when Palmer got hurt. At least see what you have in Gabbert. If he's a younger version of Stanton, that's fine. Then, like I've said all along, you have your backup for the next 3 years. Perfect. 3 years, $10 million. Here you go. Be the backup quarterback, you know, for the rest of the Bruce Arians era. Now they're doing it again the right way. Okay, so we're getting more Kim Dice. We're getting Buda Baker, obviously. Now we're going to get some Chad Williams, allegedly. You know, Jess and I will believe it when we see it. You know,
I think he's wide receiver 4. I think maybe.
And then you're going to get some Carlton Agadosi, who's going to be wide receiver 6 or 7.
And I'm not even sure about that one. I'm like, is he even going to be active on game days?
but if they do that, like if they go forward with that, the next thing I would do, and this is just me, is okay, well, what do we have in Evan Bayh at center? I know that AQ, you just talked about it. AQ Shipley's the only one that starts every game, but he's a replaceable player. Like, he's the type of guy that if he's the worst player on your offensive line's good. If he's the best or most consistent player, or only consistent player on your offensive line's in shambles. So Evan Bayh at this point, like, because you're getting to the point where you've got a lot of backup offensive linemen that you can get by with in a game, but you know, you had to go out and get Earl Watford because you couldn't trust Evan Bayh to play right guard. You know, John Wetzel is now playing right tackle because be honest, he's not good enough to play left tackle full time. You know, they gave him 3 games and they escaped that, and then it was what it was. You know, Alex Boone, I think he needs to be penciled in as your left guard. I would even extend him at this point. Yes, he made a stupid mistake, but you need a veteran on that offensive line that can kind of combat the the youthfulness that you will have everywhere else. And so, you know, if you're going to go forward here, at least see what you have in guys. You know, again, you're not trying.
They're not mailing it in. They're not mailing it in. They're going to try and win games, but they're going to try and win it differently since the guys that they were playing weren't winning games anyway.
Exactly.
And so let's do one final segment coming back on Rise of Seabreath. Let's talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars, a team who suddenly looks really good. That's coming up next on Rise of Seabreath. We're back on Rise Up Seabreath. The Cardinals play the Jacksonville Jaguars at home this week. Jacksonville has the number one defense in yards allowed, points allowed, pass defense, and they lead the league in sacks. Calais Campbell playing on the edge, playing at elite level against the Cardinals offensive line that cannot... at least in pass protection, they haven't been getting up the sacks, but they're going against Blaine Gabbert, whom the Jacksonville Jaguars drafted once upon a time. Their defense against a Cardinals offense that has been not been able to really do anything all year. What they passed 20 points, was it, for the fourth time this season? That was their 10th game. Their offense has not been good. Is there really any positive thing that anything that we can point to for the Cardinals to say that they even have a chance in this game?
I mean, I think your chance is that Blake Bortles is the quarterback on the other side, and they seem to he seems to not unpressed into being the one that makes plays to win games for the Jaguars, and their receiving corps is really bad as well.
But even still, he's got 12 touchdown passes to 7 interceptions. I mean, that's better than what Carson Palmer was.
Right. He's playing at a very replaceable but average level at this point. But it's basically a don't screw this up, Blake type stuff. And that's, you know, we've talked about this. Like, if Blaine Gabbert, if you want to go forward with Blaine Gabbert as your quarterback, that's completely fine. But this has to be your setup. You have to have one of or the best defense in the NFL, and then you have to have one of the best running games in the NFL. They have the running back for that part. They have some players on defense for that part. They just need something more, obviously. The first thing would probably be offensive line, and then the second thing would probably be a defensive line, and maybe they'll get to that point. But so Bortles can keep them in a game. But if Bortles is, you know, if Bortles is limiting all the mistakes, it's going to be one of those, you know, games where it's 14-3 or 14-7 for a really long time, and then the final score ends up being something like 21-7, and you're like, they were, you know, a play away in the third quarter, and it's like, yeah. On the scoreboard, but they weren't really a play away because they ran the ball 19 times for 6 yards, and Blaine Gabbert had, you know, 135 passing yards because this is the best defense in the NFL right now. It just is. I mean, really, really good. They've drafted extremely well, and then they've spent money on the right free agents. It's one of those. And I'm just talking about their defense. I'm not talking about their offense at all. Their offense has a lot of issues. But their defense is one of those things where you just look at it and you go, this could be special if they can figure out the offensive side of the ball.
And you look at the production they're getting across the board. You're getting 11.5 sacks and 3 forced fumbles from Calais Campbell. You've got 9 sacks and 5 forced fumbles from Yannick Ngakoue. Did I say that right? Ngakoue? Yes. I that's what they remember them saying at the draft. And they've got 40 sacks on the season. They've only given up 16 sacks. You've got players playing well all over the place. They have talent so pretty much all over the field. With Miles Jack, Telvin Smith in the middle of the field, you've got, you know, Barry Church and Tayshaun Gibson out in safety. Their corners are very good. They don't really have, right now, they don't have a weakness on defense. And now you look at, they're giving up, I mean, the third down defense, they're, I think they're less than 30% is converting. They've only given up 157. Jacksonville doesn't have a good offense. They have 201 first downs to their opponents, 157. They, you know, they're just dominating defensively.
This is literally rookie year Russell Wilson type stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, and on top of that, they got Leonard Fournette, who's just grinding out yards after yards. And I don't see really, aside from a Blake Bortles meltdown, because is this defense going to be able to stop Leonard Fournette and force the passing game? If Corey Peters isn't playing, it's going to be tough sledding.
Right, exactly. It's going to be one of those things that if Corey Peters is out, oh my gosh. They gave up 134 yards to Lamar Miller and Deontay Foreman. Imagine what Leonard Fournette's going to do to them. It's just one of those games where they have to come out. They have to score early. Maybe get a three and out, a short. This is one of those games where Bruce Arians' love of receiving the ball to start the game, should how it works. They need to come out. They need to have a good drive. They have to score points. I mean, honestly, they have to score a touchdown, because even a field goal, even if it's 3-0, you're not in a good spot. But if you get to 7-0 and you can force them on their first couple drives to have to punt, and then you can make it a 2-score game, especially going into the second quarter, all right, now you're cooking with gas. But as soon as you fall behind, even if it's 7-0, it's basically curtains at that point, because guess what you're going to do? Oh, you're going to think you're going to have to throw the ball, and
then you got
plays right into their hands. And then you are going to try to stop the run, and they're just going to keep running. I mean, they are like a blunt object. They will just continue to bludgeon you until you finally crack. And so that's the thing, is you have to put this game on Blake Bortles. You have to, 100%. If you don't do that, I don't see any way they win this game.
And, you know, it's one of those rare cases for me. You know me. You guys have listened to me this show for a long time. I'm optimistic. There's nothing I have optimistic about this game, because I don't see any matchup that really favors the Cardinals in any meaningful way. Obviously, Patrick Peterson lined up against anyone I like. But if you look at the pass rush against the Cardinals offensive line, the pass rush going against Blaine Gabbert, the receivers against the secondary for Jacksonville, the running game against, it's just nothing looks promising at all. And the Cardinals offense just has nothing. The Cardinals defense has not been, and the type of game this will be, the Cardinals aren't good at defending, because they will wear down on a physical team that's got a little bit of lead. They will fold. The Cardinals defense, they fold. The Cardinals team, they fold if it stays close and they can run the ball and continue to be physical. They eventually fold because of the way that they're built. They're built with athletes. They're not built with physicality necessarily. And the team just hasn't shown over the last year and a half that they are a mentally tough team. And so they don't have that determination like Seattle has. As bad a team as they are, they're a bad team, but play better than you, with the exception of Russell Wilson, who's a magician. They don't get flat. They're unflappable with close games. The Cardinals, things get tight for them if it stays close for too long.
Right, and they have not found a way to consistently win, and without Carson Palmer. And so now all of a sudden you're saying, all right, so you're expecting them to do something they really just haven't been able to do against good teams. And I know it's the Jacksonville Jaguars, but guys, they're a good team. They may not be great offensively, but they're a good football team.
They are. And so when we come back next week, we might be, I mean, one more loss. The Cardinals, I think, if we're looking ahead to any postseason chances, they can lose one more time. This year, the way the NFC is going, an 8-8 won't cut it. 8-8 won't cut it. He's got to be 9-7. And they've already got six losses. And we don't like the how things look for the Jacksonville game. Just because there's a lot. And Calais Campbell's coming back home. He's playing at a high level. He's gonna want to. He's gonna want to do some bad things to Blaine Gabbert. So we're probably gonna come back next week with the team on life support. But at least maybe we can. We'll start getting into Seth's wheelhouse, which is talking about prospects for the draft. So we might get some draft talks here soon enough. Or we'll still talk about the Blaine Gabbert experience because we've got that to look forward to, right? Don't we?
Every week. It's going to be awesome.
The Blaine Gabbert experience is great. And that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. You can find our show all over the place. It's on Facebook and on Twitter. Find us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show. Give us a 5-star rating. It'd be great. Stitcher Radio. TuneIn Radio. On Spreaker.com. On Amazon's Alexa. Blog Talk Radio. Audio Boom. RevengeOfTheBirds.com. And also on CardsWire.com. We're featured all over the place. You got to find us. Thanks for listening. Go Cardinals and rise up Sea Red. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll talk to you next week.